where there is appeal, and this is a new introduction. Then we have version 3, which should be an update from what we discussed this morning. We pretty much covered all areas, but there were a few outstanding areas. And then we agreed that we were going to write to the IEC. Members will then look at that letter and make sure that it covers all the areas that we thought the IEC must have before we send it off to them. Then there's an issue about the necessity or otherwise for the committee, whether it's whatever the formula is, just to go and do some study in terms of the best practices somewhere else, whether we want to go ahead or not. We must at least take a decision before we, and we can discuss that for 5 minutes. And then I see Cindy's got consideration of committee minutes, but I think that's not a priority for now. If time doesn't permit, we won't do it. But if time permits, we do. They're very short minutes. And I'm assuming that that agenda is acceptable to honorable members. Yes. Thank you very much. Michael, the floor is yours. And at the end of the day, we'll have a discussion. If there's no discussion, if it's clear, then we just, so that you get an indication of where we're going to. Over to you, sir.
Thank you, Chair. Good evening, members. As you mentioned, Chair, the committee would have to decide the format of the legislation that they are proposing will take. And the committee has two options, either an amendment bill, where we work on the existing act as a base document and simply effect changes to that act. Structural changes, in the form of deletions and insertions, or a new bill. The new bill will essentially be a repeal and replace process where we repeal and replace the existing act and in its place draft completely new bill. We will transport obviously all of the existing provisions that the committee wants us to retain into the new bill and just add the new ones as well. Just quickly, the problem with an amendment bill from our point of view is drafting it, there's no problem drafting it. So it's the same process for us to draft an amendment bill and to draft a new bill. But just in terms of reading an amendment bill, it's very difficult, it's very technical. You have to read it in conjunction with the principal act. You can't read it alone. There's a lot of brackets and insertions with respect, but it might be very difficult for a layperson to read it. And that is the bill that we will be publishing for comment further. So a member of the public having an amendment bill in front of them is going to be very difficult to comment because not all of the sections of the principal act will be in the amendment bill. It will only be the sections that we are amending or inserting that will be in there. So unless you are completely informed about what the entire process will be very difficult for you to follow. So ultimately it will be a bit difficult to comment on it. The new bill, much cleaner process. One document having clauses, one to whatever many clauses we have in there. All of the new clauses also in there. Like I said, we just transport the old clauses, clean up the language slightly, and incorporate it in there. What we will then have in the new bill would be something called transitional provisions, where we save whatever dispensation that we're carrying over, like the existing public fund, we will save those provisions in the new bill, and it will carry on as is, as it currently exists. Or whichever way the committee feels that it needs to be changed. Just quickly, I would just move on to short title and commencement, because that's another issue that you asked to address. If it's an amendment bill, the short title will obviously take the name of the principal act and simply will add amendment bill at the end, 2017, I suppose. The committee will have to decide what the new name will be if we decide we're going to go with a new bill. So that's in regards to the short title. The issue with commencement is something that the committee needs to decide, whether the act is going to come into operation, whether it's an amendment act or a new act, is going to come into operation immediately, or whether we're going to stagger bringing the different sections into operation at different times. I would imagine that the existing sections in the act that we want to retain and we want to beef up slightly could be brought into operation immediately because that regime is already in place. But section deals with private funding, and I think we're going to have a bit later on. If we choose the IEC as a controlling body, to allow the IEC to be capacitated, and I think we will be informed by that, by the presentation from the IEC. So that's as far as the process moving forward is concerned. Thank you.
Right, thank you, Meneer. The motivations for amendment and or repeal and replace, what is the members, what is our suggestion, Honourable Singh? And then Gopongo.
Thank you, Jefferson, and thank you for the presentation. My view would be that we repeal, it's neater and cleaner for us to repeal and have a new bill. But we've just got to get the timings right, so that we're not left in a grey area or in a lacuna where we don't have any legislation. So that would be my view.
Honourable Bongo? Or can we have... Yeah, okay, Bongo.
Thanks, Mr. President. I think we do have the legislation that is in existence. And the only concern raised is that if we repeal you, it may be cumbersome for the society to read and so on. But I think we can't reinvent the wheel. Most of the provisions there are still very relevant and so on. I wonder if we could, for the purpose of the community, other than what we're doing, because this work is so delicate, other than what we're doing, we can put an addendum of that explains to the community, this is what we're doing, because from where I'm sitting in the exercise that we have taken, there are about 6 or 7 areas generally that we're going to be, if we repeal, we're going to be dealing with. So zooming into those areas, I think, will make the process even much more quicker. And I don't think at this stage we must be able to say some of the provisions will come to operation at this point. At that point, we need just to concentrate on the work at hand, and we need to have this process moving within the speed of a mirage, Honourable Chair. So I think we need to repeal the bill. Look at those provisions. I don't think there are many provisions, because the first fund is the second fund, and they're just technicalities that would deal with, and they're not many. 4 or 5, then we move. I think we must move with speed, Chair. Thanks.
So you're supporting Singh's proposal? Yeah. It's not an amendment. A repeal means it's a totally new bill, in the vein that was suggested by... All right. That is fine. Honourable Mafu, and then followed by Prof, and then Matthijs, and then Melda. We don't have to have a long discussion on this, and then we'll take it from there. Honourable Mafu?
No, thank you, Chair. I think I'm encouraged by the presentation when they say even if we do the new bill, but there will be transitional provisions. And the fact that even that new bill, it will not be lost, the old one won't be lost, because they will be able to take all issues to the new bill. That, for me, is quite encouraging, because what then it said up there was the fact that if you amend, it gets very confusing for a lay person to read. Yet, even though it would be a new bill, it would be a new bill, but technically, in old bill, because all those areas there in the old bill that we have not reproduced is in the bill. I'm sold on that.
Thank you very much, Honourable Prof. Kobis.
Okay, with the sentiments of my colleagues, that at the end of the day, yeah, even if we are attending to few issues, but at the end of it is repealing the bill. So definitely this is a new bill, and of course there are issues that will be transported into the new bill from the bill that we have at the moment. Yeah, I think we need to go on with the task at hand, some of the issues with regard to time, etc., will come later on.
Honourable Matthijs.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, we concur that new bill, and then we'll talk about the time period. My recommendation would be a new financial year, and also if we're setting up a completely new fund, etc., must be able to allow whichever the department, whether it's the IEC or a new association, to set up and be able to manage that.
Thank you very much, Honourable Mulder.
Chairperson, an amendment bill is going to be immensely complex. I support the concept that we repeal the current act, we come with a new act. And the only thing that the transitional provisions basically will say is that the current arrangement stays in place until the new bill comes into operation. And there's no reason why the new bill can't come into operation as soon as possible. That's just my view.
All right. It shall be a repeal and replace process. In terms of the name, the short title that you do, and of course it's going to take into account what Honourable Mulder is saying, that there will be the transition period that we're all talking about to set it up. Is there a view in terms of the name of the new bill? You're saying we've got to give you that, or can that be delayed until afterwards, or do you need it now? Can we don't have to argue about that now. Do you need it now? Members have comments on that, Honourable Mulder?
Yes, interesting, Chairperson. If you look at the current bill, the current name of the bill, there's a number of problems in terms of what we're going to do now. The first one, it starts off with public funding. We now go beyond public funding. It talks with regard to represented political parties, and I've mentioned that earlier. I'm not sure, and we haven't decided to do anything about that. If we're going to regulate funding, also private funding of political parties, are we going to make that also effective with regard to political parties that are not represented? In other words, a political party out there is not represented at the moment. Will they also have to disclose, etc.? Or are we going to say that regulation and those things are only triggered the moment you get elected? I don't have an answer for that. But you'll have to take that into consideration with the name as well.
So are you suggesting we need some time to think about it ourselves and then come up with an appropriate name that covers everything at the end of the day? Mr. Prince, you're not going to... That's fine. Thanks. Can we then go to version 3, members? Just to, for the sake of honourable members that were not here this morning, Comrade Gordy, Prof. Kubisa Matthijs, although your colleague was here, I forget his name, I apologize. Mr. Fick, Honourable Fick. We, Honourable Matthijs, you recall we did work yesterday. We then came up with version two that we worked on, and this is a product of what we've worked on this morning. But so that everybody's taken on board, we'll go through all of them. There's lots of consensus on much of them, but it's open to members to comment on any one of them, except to say that we are not going to deal with page one for now. We're going to move directly to part two. Part one is what we will deal with lastly. And I am going to read it, and I hope it assists members, but I'm going to go by the numbers, number four, number five. Yes, yes, sir.
Can I beg for your indulgence? I don't want to deal with part one, but the preamble, there's just one word I want to check. But if it was a substantive issue over which there was heavy engagement, I'll be prepared to let it pass, because if you took a lot of time around it. I'm looking at this first.
Let me try and help you on that one. We've not looked at it at all. At all, we haven't. We thought when we finish with everything, we'll come back to the preamble and those things, and that's what we have discussed.
No, that's fine.
Then okay. Yeah. We didn't mean that we're done with it. We're saying that we will revisit it. That's, I'm sorry, it's mine. Okay. The areas that are open for discussion from this morning, I'm informed, are underlined. But because we want everybody to come on board, we will just go through all of them very briefly. The establishment of the public representative political fund. If you go to the original, and I'm hoping members have got the original bill, because remember working with the original act together with the new one. What we said there was that we're going to delete section 2. Delete section 2. I don't know why you put 2, 1, B, and D. It's just section 2, D, and B, not 1, D, and B. 2, 1.
There's
no 2, 1. It's just 2.
It's 2, 2.
It's 2, 2.
Sorry, Chairperson, yes. It's 2, 2, B, and 2, 2, D.
Right.
May I ask something
else? We'll come to Mulder and then... Do you want to proceed or what?
Open on this particular one.
Mulder wants to talk on that one. Can we ask Mulder, then we'll come to you?
Now, just...
Okay.
It's what you were saying. You're saying we're deleting section 2. And here I'm saying, here it says amend. And you're saying delete. So that's what was confusing.
You know, my understanding, Mulder...
We are going to take the current section 2, and it's going to become part of the new bill. But the section that's going to be part of the new bill, the current text, needs to be changed first. That's the amend. And how do we change that? By deleting those two sections, 2.2b and 2.2d. Then we've changed it, and then it becomes part of the new bill, as we have changed it, the amend part. May I just add something else, Chairperson? With regard to the heading there of part 2, we talk about the represented political party fund. While the previous act refers to parties in the plural, I'm not sure what the correct term would be. Represented political parties fund, majority, plural, or party fund. I'm not sure that's the thing to speak.
All right. You guys will deal with that one. So we can accept that point number 4 is done. Point number 5, deposit and investment fund. We said the current provisions suffice. When I say the current, I'm talking about the existing act. So there will be no amendments on the new one. Happiness, thank you. Management and control of the fund. That is section 4 of the current act, or the existing act. And the IEC said GAAP is no longer the current, so we'll change GAAP to the relevant one. Wherever it says GAAP in section 4, we will change it to the relevant one. Other than that, we are comfortable. I'm ticking number 6. Allocations of funds, that's our current section of 5 in the Act. Under that one, 5.1b. Yes?
Listen, we don't mention it there, but the current 5.1a, Roman 1, 2, and 3, as far as I'm concerned, should just remain as is. But they refer to what we're talking about, National Assembly, Provincial Legislature, or both National Assembly and Provincial. It just indicates who we are talking about.
Let's go to 5.1a at this point. Are we happy with the proposal, Honourable Matthijs?
Okay, I'm just going back to the point that Honourable Milholder raised about whether we're going to talk about represented political parties or whether we're going to talk about political parties, and then that is also going to influence our wording on the Act, wouldn't it? No, because if we're saying that, if we're only referring to political parties who are represented, right, we have seats either in the legislatures or in parliament, right, if the bill is dealing with that, Or is these sections of the bill only dealing with those parties who are going to get funding for, or who's going to receive funding even though they registered, but they might not have seats? There's those two things, yeah.
Now, honourable members, I thought we took a decision yesterday that this is represented political parties. And our understanding of represented means you're represented in the legislature or at national level. That's what we're dealing with here. Honourable Mullen.
Absolutely, that's correct, Chairperson. The only possibility that we deal with where unrepresented parties might come in is where we talk about donations directly to a political party. In other words, those donations do not have to do with any one of the funds. It's a donation directly to a party, and we are now saying that needs to be declared, etc., etc. The question is, are we going to expect unrepresented parties to do exactly the same with regard to direct donations to them? Or are we going to say, we're going to ignore that, it only becomes relevant the moment when a party becomes a represented party? But it only deals with that aspect, and we can deal with that when we get to strict donations to parties. At the moment, it's not relevant with regard to the fund that deals with represented parties.
Honourable Singh.
Thank you, Chair. But I think for the future, this bill is not meant, the act is not going to be meant for us only. Maybe we need to define what is represented parties. You know, it's within a session or whatever. Because at the moment when we talk about 15 parties, it is those from 2014 to 2019, because we are represented as follows. Now, that could change all the time. So I think we need to somehow say what do we mean by represented parties and during which session of parliament they are represented. The only issue about the parties that are not represented in parliament now is when it comes to a new election and the IEC is going to look at the fees. You know, the fees, the deposits that we pay. But I think we need to define represented parties. It's there in the constitution. It's there in the legislation. But maybe just for expansion.
I don't think we can put in the bill from 2014 to 2019 because we're going to change it all the time. And I thought that the understanding of represented is when you are eligible for a seat, whether at the province or national. Let's not complicate it. So the minute you qualify after the IEC results, you fit into this category. Is that all right? Thank you, honourable members. We are on 7, section 5.1b, permitted purposes for which funds may be used. This is, and here, honourable members, we're talking now about the IEC funds, remember. So let's not confuse them with private funds and direct to the party. This is IEC funds. And section 2b sets out to be employed in determining the formula. All we said there was the technical team must try and tighten it up, but we are comfortable with what lives or what is in the existing act. And we agreed that even yesterday. Happiness? Thank you. Political parties to account for monies paid to the fund, we are saying that we keep it as it is. 8, we tick. Please shout if you want to think. Unspent funds, we keep as it is. I'll keep on reminding you, we're talking about the existing IEC funds. So what we're saying to you, Michael, in the new act, you will take it as it is and, of course, clean up the English if needs be. Point number 10, recovery of allocated irregular spent funds. We're saying that we're comfortable with what currently exists. Tick. In terms of surplus monies, we're happy with what currently pertains. Tick. All right. Just then to recap, honourable members, in terms of the central fund, not the central fund, the IEC fund, we're going to change section 2, as honourable members has mentioned, that one, wherever it says they are entitled to receive other than from the fiscus will remove that one and the changes that we've made. That's the only real change in terms of the current IEC fund. Honourable Chase.
Okay, I just want to get clarity about something. Remember we discussed this, the IEC funds, and then there's the public funding that legislatures are also giving as well. And that we needed to have a discussion whether it's going to apply to that as well. Right? Am I making sense? Right? So the IEC issues money, and remember we were saying that there's, put the constituency allowances aside, right? There's legislatures that give out party funds as well, which is equivalent to what the IEC does. So are we capturing that this is going to apply also to the funds that the legislatures are going to, and they're going to be governed by the same act that the legislatures provide party funds to the political parties represented in the provinces? Because we had that discussion, and I don't know if we followed up on that this morning.
All right. We decided that we'll lump all those things when we come to the allocations and the equitable and equal. So that point is there. We will certainly get you before the end of the day as to how we manage it. But it hasn't been lost, Honourable Matthijs. So in terms of the IEC fund, the 140 million, we are covered. I'm moving away from that, so nobody refers to that. We now move to, by the way, we decided that henceforth, it will be called the Multi-Party Democracy Fund. We've taken that decision. So not central fund, and remember all the names. We agreed this morning that it's the Multi-Party Democracy Fund. We are raising, remember, that weren't here this morning. If you violently oppose it, now's your chance to say it. But we thought that should be the standard in all our literature. Happy with the heading. They agreed. Fine. We also agreed yesterday that in the new legislation, we must formally establish this fund because it's a statutory fund. So 12 I can tick. Point 12. Are we going for points 12 will tick? 13, dealing with deposits, investments, and all those things. We said the way it is being dealt with in the IEC fund should be mirrored in this fund. Okay? If I'm going too fast, or if you want to make, to interject, please shout. Cindy will be watching for hands. Allocations. We, this morning and yesterday, said whatever we agree upon in terms of the allocation for the IEC fund must be applicable to this fund. So if it's 90-10, it'll be 90-10 here. If it's 50-50, it'll be 50-50 here. It's that type of thing. We agree on the principle? Yes. That takes us to bullet point 15. And here we're talking about the central fund, I'm making the mistake for some. The Multi-Party Democracy Fund. We had a discussion on disclosures, and I see here they say agreed, but so that members can come to speed that weren't here. We said when it comes to disclosure, that everybody that donates to the Multi-Party Democracy Fund is obliged to disclose, everybody. That was the decision. There was a lot of debate about it, but the principle is that fund can't receive money from people they don't know who they're receiving it from. So we're talking about the Multi-Party Democracy Fund. The decision was it's total disclosure. So we tick 15, Honourable this.
Total disclosures funds, Chairman, did we agree on what form the disclosure would take?
It's not me. Members that were here will help me. I think what we said is, in the first instance, the recipient of that money must keep a register. In other words, the IEC must keep a register of everybody that donates to that fund. We also had a discussion about that register. Does it then become, do we publish it annually? or is it accessible to the general public and that type of thing. But I think the starting principle is that it must be there. And members will assist me in terms of what we said, because there was a debate about if Vincent Smith comes in and says, you know, I ideally want to deposit, but I don't want it to be generally known because my children will feel that of my 100 rand inheritance, I in fact deposited here and they've only got 50 rand. So that can be negotiated. We don't have to get into the details. But that Vincent gave that Vincent donated 100 rand must be in the register. And then Vincent must motivate to the IEC why he thinks that whilst you know it, don't make it known to my children for whatever reason. So in terms of disclosure, there must be a register, to answer your question. It's whoever runs this fund, we say to them, we need that register. And that register must be given to the auditing authority, be it the auditor general or whatever. Whenever the auditor general needs it, it must be given to the auditing authority, both from an empowerment point of view and whatever. So a register. Happiness? Matthias?
Happiness, of course. I'm just concerned about the administrative work involved with the IEC. Because if people just randomly want to deposit just 100 rand into the account, because people do EFTs these days and they might not do that. So maybe we should look at having like a cap, like if it's over a certain amount. It's going to be a hectic amount of administration work to be able to capture if someone deposits and they don't send proof of payment, and maybe those are some of the questions we can ask the IEC on how they can track the deposits, because it will be a lot. I mean, just on membership, I know you can get deposits that are hard to track, so just in terms of maybe we should look at
There's a valid point. Whilst we say total disclosure, do we want disclosure of somebody that decides, let me put my change from the supermarket into that fund? Do members want to comment on it? Or should we say any amount to the fund above a certain amount? It's purely for admin, but we agree the principle should be ultimate or maximum disclosure, just from a practical point of view. Any comment? Or can we leave that to the IEC and find out if it would be additional work? Is that okay? Okay. All right. It'll be one of the things that we can raise with the IEC. But that there must be a register of a total disclosure is the principle. We've agreed on that one. Can we move to 16?
Can I just want, while getting on to 16, I know, but if you look at 16 and 20, seems to have the same, more or less the same, so what's the difference? Because then we can discard off one and still, or add to the other. Because it's prohibited donation, and 20 is prohibited donation.
Now, the one is to the Multi-Party Democracy Fund, the other one is directly to political parties. It's two different regimes. Okay. Here we're talking about who we think should not be allowed to contribute to the Multi-Party Democracy Fund. And there was general agreement this morning. So for the purposes of colleagues from the DA, Matthijs and Kubisa, we're saying state-owned enterprises, departments, and entities funded by the taxpayer should not be allowed to contribute to the fund. So government departments, SOEs, and entities. In other words, they shouldn't be double-dipping from the taxpayer. We're saying any proceeds of crime should not be allowed. We said that this fund should not be able to receive donations from the lottery board. We said no foreign government should donate to the fund. We said foreign individuals, and I want to get back to this concept called foreign, and members can talk about it. Foreign individuals or corporates donations, donors, we can... I don't know what we're saying here. Eh? But I don't know why you're putting it as a proposal. I don't know what you're doing there. What we were saying this morning is that corporate donors and foreign individuals should be allowed to pay into the multi-party democracy fund. I think you guys must check it. And we must subject it to a cap. So that was an area that we had a discussion, but we said we will come back to it and let's have a discussion around that. I think the 1, 2, 3, we can tick, bullet point 1, 2, 3, state-owned proceeds from crime and national lottery. Let's talk about, and foreign governments, of course, and foreign governments. All we're talking about, foreign individuals and what they call their corporate donors. We're talking about contributions to the fund. Now there's an argument of we shouldn't allow it, then there's an argument why don't you allow it, because it's anyway going to go into a central fund that benefits everybody. That was the debate that we have, and we need to tighten it. Can I just start, honorable members, by saying, and this is my view, I think the term foreign is slightly confusing, because you see, I could be a South African in the diaspora. So I think what we should be saying is citizens and non-citizens, because I can be a citizen of South Africa based in Dubai. Understand what I'm saying? I'm a citizen based in Dubai. So if we then said non-citizens, in other words, you don't have citizenship to South Africa. It's different to somebody that is South African and lives in London, but remember, a citizen is able to vote even though he lives in London. I think that's going to be the beginning, because this thing of foreign, somebody was asking, but who's foreign? What about people with dual citizenship? That was the kind of argument. So I'm just suggesting to us, shouldn't we change foreign to citizen and non-citizen? Would that not help us clarify the argument, or is foreign sufficient without causing confusion? I'm saying that because we're talking about prohibitions, and I'll get to it later, but I was just thinking about the concept. What does a foreign citizen mean? Does somebody who is South African by birth hasn't denounced his citizenship and yet is living in London and hasn't taken up a UK citizenship, what do we classify him as? Is he foreign? Is he citizen, non-citizen? So as we talk to this subject, I'm saying just think about that one. But we are now dealing with who should be paying into the multi-party democracy fund. Liz, you can have the first bite.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As you indicated, I'm a little bit confused, because if we're saying that anyone can donate to the multi-party democracy fund, then the definition of foreign falls away. And we don't need to define foreign, because we've got the exclusions, which we've listed, the four top exclusions, and other than those, then I understood we were saying anyone could donate, or if I misread it or misunderstood it.
We're dealing with that bullet point only. Sing?
Yeah, so, yeah, I'm raising the same point, is that, okay, I'm agreeing with you that we could differentiate and say citizens, South African citizens and non-citizens, but if they are donating into multi-party democracy fund and we're demanding that there's 100% disclosure on both sides, I'm not understanding why we are prohibiting foreign governments or individuals to make donations. Yeah. Well, we'll come back to that, but you've got foreign governments written on here too. But well, why if they have to disclose? But also on your point about citizens and non-citizens, we can do that. But in saying that they're prohibited,
it's going to happen like this, because your colleague was here this morning when we had that debate and he exhausted it.
Oh, okay.
Your colleague was here.
Oh, no,
yeah. we exhausted it when your colleague was here, but we thought we must bring it to everybody so that we're all at least on the same page for it. But I think there was an agreement that foreign governments, we were trying to understand why would a foreign government, be it US or whoever, want to donate here, and do we want them to donate in South Africa? Should we be babysat by them, or should we just take ownership as South Africans? I think that was the rationale that we raised there. But yeah, it's there's no holy cow. If you want to reintroduce it, you can reintroduce it. Singh.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. You see, when we're looking at foreign individuals, we must link it to the corporate donors as well. Because we're meaning foreign individual or foreign corporate donors. Now, who is a foreign corporate donor? Somebody listed on the London Stock Exchange that has business interests in South Africa and subsidiaries here. Are we going to ban them from contributing to the multi-party democracy fund? No. So, you know, so I think we've got to be careful with our choice of words in the legislation or the regulation, so that we're clear. I don't think we can ban any company that's listed on Johnson Stock Exchange but that has business interest here from contributing. As long as they follow the principles. I think we should, as I said earlier on, we should hang our coat on the principles. Transparency, accountability, declaration.
The Honourable Fick.
Thanks, Honourable Chairperson. My point that I would like to add is, what are we trying to achieve by restricting donations? The first four are obvious, but by including the fifth one, I think we're just complicating matters here. And I would agree with Honourable Singh and Honourable Lee that maybe we should just exclude it, because is it going to do any harm? Perhaps not. As long as there's no conflict, as long as there's no harm going to be done, then I think we should rather just exclude that restriction. Thank you.
Honourable Prof. Kubisa.
Yeah, no. So, Chair, I was not in the meeting in the morning, and you now have a consensus on the matter, but I would have argued differently. I have argued differently because I mean, there could be corporate donor companies that want to donate in good faith and they are interested in South Africa, South Africa's democracy, just for the advancement of democracy. Let me complicate it even further. There could be multinational companies that want to donate to this multi-party democracy fund. But the government, that should be the underlying principle, should be, are they following the principles that we have set, that are set in the law? Do they disclose? Are they transparent? I mean, because what is of prime importance in this regard is the law. Do they abide by the law? So that would have been my argument, Chairperson, but I now hear that there is a consensus on the matter. Okay.
There's no consensus on the matter. We said we'll finalize it here.
Okay.
We'll take Bongo and then Comrade Gordy. And I'm also going to make my input as an individual, and we'll do it as a chair. I'm sure I'm allowed to debate in it. Bongo?
Thank you, Chair. I think the premise from which we moved as we're discussing the matter in the morning was we want to promote transparency to enhance democracy. And the third one is accountability. But now, as you enhance democracy, the critical matter was I I made an example of a yesterday article. The parliamentary committee was discussing about whether there's money or not. An individual came in and said, how much do you want? 2 million or 3 million? Can give it to you. So the whole objective is to make sure that you protect the democracy and you protect the sovereignty of the country. So much so that a company or a person who is foreign does not necessarily get to interfere. With that interference, it may start with 2 million, the following year maybe 3 million, it grew until that particular person begin to say, I'm beginning to control now all of you. Or it may give you big money. 3 years later, you say, hey, I no longer have this money, but I can provide it. I can provide it if you can do 1, 2, 3. An example was made and say, if you allow my corporate to do 1, 2, 3, all of us will then be captured in a way or another as a group. Even if it's a multi one, but will be captured by the fact that we are benefiting from a foreign corporate that will want us to move to do certain things in a particular way as political parties. So I wanted to cap that. I think that is the whole intention. And we've seen this happening in other countries. So that was the intention. So the intention is to deal with that. That is why we think we must not allow. Another example which was made is that by Honorable Maff was that in the UK such things are generally strictly controlled. So as a developing democracy, we thought we need to cap this matter at that level. So that, I think that is the background against which we moved in the morning. And I thought there was consensus. But I'm worried that we're joined by new members who are not in the EA in the morning, and we'll need to repeat ourselves on what we said. So I think I can stop it at that, Chair. Thanks.
I thought we took a decision this morning that we will bring other members on board. I mean, there's no other way of us doing it. So I understand the frustration, but I think we have to bear with it. Otherwise, and that was the intention of having this afternoon. Honorable Gordy, followed by, Gordy.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. My apologies. Still, work. I need to be going in and out. I think on bullet point five, bullet point five, I think the only objection I have, I don't know how you might have discussed my absence, is on the sub bullet point two, which talks about subject to annual determined cap. Otherwise, I'm comfortable with that bullet point as it stands, as long as we minus that second sub bullet point. Because if those people are going to donate to a pool where all political parties are going to benefit equally or by some agreed formula, then it does not advantage or disadvantage anybody in a way that can undermine the democratic project that we have. And when I looked at that, I thought the presentation, especially by the Azanian People's Organization, spoke at length around issues of national security and national sovereignty. And one would imagine that all of us in the political space in this country would want to start from a patriotic point of view that says we're South Africans, we're Africans, we're proud, we're happy, we're running our affairs, and we want to do so and contest amongst ourselves without having somebody who is not part of our democratic journey, wanting to influence things in a particular way that may have nothing to do with the future of the country, except their own, you know, personal interest. If they have the interest of the country at heart, well, let them donate where everybody can benefit. But as for locals, because they are locals, they can pick and choose who they want to support. And my understanding of foreign corporate donors, I understand that you know, in a world where multinationals, transnationals are almost everywhere, if a foreign company with a subsidiary in the country wants to donate through that subsidiary that is in our country, it should not be treated as a foreign company. For example, any, I did not mention any of these companies, whichever one is from Belgium, but has a subsidiary, has invested in our country, and their local office want to donate to the APC. Surely, it should not be seen as a foreign donation per se, as separate from a company giving out American dollars or British pounds from London directly to the account of a single political party in the country. Thank you.
Let's deal with the second one. And I'm looking at our drafters. That thing about annual cap, we agreed this morning, doesn't exist. We agreed this morning, so Cody, don't have a problem with that one. But I and Miller, you'll follow, because you're the next one. I am of the same view as Comrade Cody. If a foreign, or if a multinational company, corporate, has no footprint in South Africa, I think it should not be allowed. But if there's a footprint there, and I don't know why you don't use names, but I will use a name just from an example point of view. Because somebody asked, is Coca-Cola South African? I think it was your colleague, Wonderful Matthijs. Is Coca-Cola South African or foreign? Because it might be listed in a foreign country, but it's got a subsidiary here. And we said these are the things we're going to come back to. After having thought about it, I'm saying, if Coca-Cola South Africa donates, it should be acceptable. But if Coca-Cola head office wants to donate directly from there, I think we should restrict it on second thought. So I think we must distinguish between corporates who have got a subsidiary in South Africa, and they must be via the subsidiary. But if they've got no footprint in South Africa, I think they should continue to be prohibited. That's just my view. We'll hear Mulder, and then we'll try and tighten that one up. Can I just mention another thing, because it was mentioned by Honorable Matthijs around the individual, that's the corporate. Honorable Matthijs, are you, if I'm understanding you correctly, are you saying that a rich non-South African citizen, we're talking about individuals now, and a wealthy philanthropist that is whatever nation, nationality, are you saying we should allow them to contribute in this fund? Because I just want to understand that one. My view, that's why I introduced citizen and non-citizen. I'm saying it doesn't matter where you live. If you are a citizen, there should be nothing. But if you're a non-citizen, if you are somebody from Mars, no interest in South Africa, nothing in South Africa, should we allow you to go? And the point is, yeah, but he's interested in the democratic process. Should we allow him? Bearing in mind, honorable members, that when we looked at the submissions from some of the submitters, there was a study of 35 countries across the world, including the UK, Britain, and everybody else. Only 7 countries allowed foreign. That's what I'm saying. that forum, maybe only 7 countries allowed non-citizen donations. Of the 35, in terms of the best practice, the one angle was highly regulated, the other was laissez-faire. And if we're saying that these are developed countries and they're saying they don't want to do it, we that are still starting off, why we should, those are my arguments, that foreign funding is not allowed in the UK. Foreign funding is not allowed in the US. Why are we here in South Africa then agitating for foreign funding? That's my argument. But then after this, we can wrap it up. And I'm saying, let's bear in mind that we must take some of the considerations from these. I'm not saying they're right or wrong. So I just thought I'd put that, Honorable Mother. And then you can raise it, and then we'll let's see how far we go. Honorable Mother. You want to come back, Matthijs? Yeah, all right. So it'll be Mulder, it'll be Matthijs, it'll be Lies, and Maseko.
Thank you, Chairperson. We are dealing with the Multi-Party Democracy Fund, nothing else. Multi-Party Democracy Fund, that's point one. Point two, we agree that the things that are underlined are open for discussion tonight. So that's why we are discussing them. This morning we discussed these issues in terms of who should be allowed to make donations to the Multi-Party Democracy Fund. Mr. Bonker made the point, and I said, yes, he convinced me, we should leave foreign governments out. And we agreed with that, and we gave the mark, and he says foreign governments should not be able to donate. And then we had a discussion with regard to individuals who are not South African citizens, who are out there in the world, and we had a discussion with regard to international corporates, whether they should be able to donate. Now the question would be, first of all, no donation by anyone to the Multi-Party Democracy Fund can go with any conditions. Nobody can set any conditions. It's an open donation. Nobody can set a condition to say, I will donate to this fund if the parties do the following. That's not possible. The money can only go into that fund in terms of what that fund is entitled supposed to do. And we all know that that fund, as we've already agreed, is going to distribute the money in order to enhance multi-party democracy between all the parties. So any company or any individual, whoever they may be, whatever agenda they may have, they cannot achieve that agenda by giving to the multi-party democracy fund because they're going to give to all the parties. In terms of the formula that we decide, they've got no say in that formula. Then this morning we said, okay, fine, we don't want foreign governments to contribute. But if I remember correctly, Chairperson, you made a very good point and said, but what about the European Union? What about the African Union? Let's say they've got an enhancement of a democracy program and they would like to assist South Africa and they want to make a contribution to our multi-party democracy fund. Should we exclude them and say the European Union, it's not a government, it's not an international corporation, it's not a foreign individual, it's this body and they would like to contribute. Should we say no, they're not allowed to? Not only the European Union, the African Union. Let's say SADC. I don't know. Then the idea came to say, well, okay, fine, let's say governments are not allowed to contribute, but we should allow foreign individuals, under the circumstances, international corporates should be allowed to donate, the implication be then also European Union, etc. And then the question of a cap came into it. If we say they should, then maybe we should put a cap on the amount that they should be able to donate or not. The cap in terms of amounts we've not discussed at all. So if it's framed in the way it's done now at the moment, it's in a negative way to say they're allowed, we should not be allowed to donate. We say they should be allowed as long as they donate to the fund. But all donations is to the fund. So it could be a different way to say donations by foreign individuals and corporates are allowed, but not above a certain amount, if you talk about the cap. So I can understand in terms of sovereignty, etc., the argument would be if we say we are not talking about specific donations to the political party directly. We're talking about this fund that's there to enhance multi-party democracy. We decide where it goes. We decide what the formula is. Should we then prevent individuals who want to enhance democracy in South Africa not to make those donations? I don't have a problem with foreign governments, but I'm not convinced that we should exclude other people just because they're not South African citizens if they contribute to the fund, which we decide what the money should be allocated to and the formula, it's our decision, not theirs. it's something else when it comes to direct donations to political parties.
Honourable Matthews.
Thank you, Chair. I'm partly covered on those points because it's coming to a multi-party fund, right? So there are no terms that they can dictate to. Perhaps, and which we kind of half discussed in our last previous discussion, is that whether we will allow parties or individuals to make a donation directly to a party via the Democracy Fund, right? So there was those two. You donate, and you donate into a multi-party Democracy Fund, and then you decide, okay, this is the formula, and we're distributing it. Then there's the other that says, okay, I want this money to go to the EFF, but I'm putting it through to the multi-party Democracy Fund, and then that body is the one who's responsible for dispersing it. And we didn't get to clarify whether that is something we're going to allow or whether they will go directly to the party. But I don't see how that could be an issue because it's clear they can't influence all parties in terms of who they donate into. There's no possibility of capture because they're not going to come and set up meetings. I think the issue comes in on those direct meetings directly. I want to fund this party directly, so they have meetings and say, okay, I'll give you money, but I need you to affect that bill or whatever. But the money is going to be centrally located, and I don't see how there's possibilities of state capture through that process at all. So I'm saying we should allow whoever, foreign individuals, and I actually don't even think it should be capped either. There's no reason. The more money we get, the better. And especially all those European Union countries, they owe us a lot of money for all the crimes they've committed in our continent, so we must take as much money as we can from them to build our democracy.
Honourable Lisa, followed by myself.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think the points have been quite well made by the two previous speakers, and I just want to some clarity. Thanks, Mr. Chairman. You know, we are talking about a multi-party democracy fund. We're not talking about donations to political parties. And I think you may find that the prohibitions in the countries like the UK and the States are talking about prohibitions to political parties, not to some central fund. But I'm open to correction. So I think that there is the distinction. And in this sense, where it's a independently controlled fund that distributes the funds therein to political parties on an agreed or statutory formula, there cannot be any harm in who puts money in there other than the prohibitions we've already agreed on and how much they put in.
Honourable Maseko, thank you, Honourable.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think the example that you made of Coca-Cola, whether it is Coca-Cola South Africa, even if Coca-Cola in Atlanta puts in money to channel it to Coca-Cola SA, and it's going to the central fund. So I think that one there's no problem. But my problem is where, you know, there's experience in other fora that one participates in. For instance, in the Commonwealth Parliamentary Association, you see the likes of the UK would go, for instance, to the Caribbean countries and say, we understand that you are poor, like the Canadians also, and we can help, you know. But that help is not innocent. It's usually to influence some decision within the association. So looking at all these things, one is also weary of some of these the corporates. But I'm glad that we finalized that foreign governments say no. But I think we should agree to your proposal to change foreign individuals to citizens and non-citizens, because truly it really does not make sense. Why would I, Lindiwe Maseko, be interested in finding some democracy in Ukraine? What do I have to benefit? So I want to propose, Chair, that citizens who have not denounced their citizenship as South African citizens should donate to the MPDF, and the non-citizens should be a no-no. But if you change also the name...
No, it's fine. At some point we'll allow everybody to speak, and at some point we'll take a decision. I just want to say to members, bear in mind, honourable members, although we want to be one, as close as possible to the final product, and two, that this is not going to be the panacea to all the problems. Bear in mind that after this draft, we're still going to give it to South Africans, who will have a second bite, and we will have a second bite. So whatever we agree upon today doesn't mean that is it. So, I mean, we'll allow South Africans to come and say, but we think you guys have missed the boat here or whatever. So let's not pretend as if this is the final one. And also that this that we are doing is never going to be the panacea to all our problems, but let's get it as close as possible. Now, I noted Gumede and then Prof. But we can't discuss it forever. We'll have to take a decision at one point, how do we deal with it? Because we're only dealing with one, the last bullet point, quite frankly. So it's Gumede, it's Kubisa, and it's Bongo. And then let's see if we can meet each other, or how do we take it forward. Wow.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Let us look at a situation where, as you mentioned in the morning, where now it's a decision on things like the Rhino Horn. And we are having a multi-party system, but that multi-party system is a 70-30. 70 in government, 30% the total of opposition. And then it is targeted at the majority. And then you find that the decision that is taken is based on the monetary benefits to the country rather than the national interest of the country. Do we then find the proposal suitable or not? I'm just putting it out there so that it is one of the factors that we consider.
Prof. Kubis?
No, Chair, I was just going to say, after all, we cannot discuss it forever. We must somehow move on, because in as much we are trying to distill this, but still going to go to a variety of people still work on it, but we must try and forge ahead. And perhaps your suggestion was trying to somehow assist us to say citizens or non-citizens. I think that one is moving closer to assisting us. I'm not saying it is the suggestion, because no matter how we distill it, but still subject to continuous revamping. For instance, Jefferson, you might have an organization like the African-American Renaissance, you know, which has no foothold in South Africa, but loves South African democracy. And when you go to America, for instance, in Atlanta, where there is Coca-Cola and others, go to Maryland and other places, you find that organization is very strong. It loves South African democracy. Sometimes it would donate to the African Renaissance. Well, we don't know whether at times it would donate to the government of South Africa, but we think about those things. We cannot exhaust it, but I'm saying your suggestion somehow tries to move us closer to what we need.
Honorable Bongo.
No, Chair. I think the compelling point that we raised earlier on was that we're of the view that South Africans themselves must bear the burden of the democracy that is in South Africa. The burden must be on South Africans themselves so that they themselves get to be part of the decisions of what democracy must entail. They themselves must be their own liberators. It's a democracy that finds expression from South Africa itself. And another matter which we have raised was, you know, if you say foreign countries, like Honorable Muda agreed, and I thought he also agreed with the second part, because what I also said in the morning was that if a foreign country wants to do that, it can then use one of the corporates in that country to get back to us, if they really want to do that. But at this stage, let's secure the democracy for the sake of sovereignty of this country. Get everyone who's from outside not to participate in terms of donating. And then we'll take it, I think we'll take it from there. So I'm suggesting that maybe, like Honorable Kubisa is saying, we'll have a second bite after others have, or South Africans themselves may need to participate in terms of saying, do they really want to take ownership of this democracy which is developing, or they want to contribute, because we said we are still going to call corporate South Africa and other stakeholders. But for now, I think we can just say that foreign governments and their corporate, we must just say they must wait a bit. Maybe the matter will arise again. For the sake of it, it will arise again when the corporate South Africa and other stakeholders come to present in the second bite. Thanks.
Right. In terms, because we are trying to assist the drafters, I thought we said foreign governments we've agreed upon. That last bullet point, what are we saying, what must they put in that bullet point? Are we saying, and we talk about corporates in the main, we're also saying there's no cap, so this thing of cap must fall out. Are we saying foreign corporates? And then remember this argument that others don't have a footprint here. There's that argument that we can allow them if they've got subsidiary, others are saying, but others might not have the subsidiary, like African Union doesn't have a subsidiary, although we might be members of the African Union, but the Atlanta argument that you... What are we saying in terms of our draft that we're going to send out to South Africans? Because clearly they will comment on it. But how should we craft it? Foreign governments we put in there are a no-no. What are we saying about corporates? Foreign corporates, no. Unless they've got a footprint. So I'm saying in terms of the draft, are you saying we must say no? No, it's fine. That's what I'm saying. So there's one that's saying in terms of foreign corporates, whether they have a footprint or don't have a footprint, we should leave it here and we'll have a second bite later. That's the one option. The other option is saying it's a no.
No,
can we just open that
if
one?
If they have a footprint, yes. Yeah.
Saying only if they have a footprint. Others are saying, even if you don't have a footprint, they must be here. I'm saying those are two opposing views. How's that a good? In terms of foreign...
Footprint. But, Chairperson, I just want to ask from a matter of process. When we're sending the draft out, you know, and I sat in Kolesa, and some of us were there, there were options. Is that a possibility to the public?
No.
To say... that or that option in
options.
In any way, in any form.
No. You're going to have to send as close to a bill or a version that we agree on.
No, we can't do it that way. So we have to sit and toss the coin. Quite frankly, what do we put in here? Because really, I don't want us to be voting now, because we're still going to have a second bite. We really don't want to be voting now on something that, even if we voted on, corporate South Africa have not come to participate. They might have a more wisdom than us. It could even be that we just leave it out totally now, we memorize it and we put it into the second bill. But should we be spending an hour debating, should it be in or should it not be in? I'm appealing to our adulthood. Because we'll all be participating after the second round, and we can go and think about it, consult about it, but I don't think we're going to spend another 5 minutes on one bullet point, honorable members. I really don't think. Cordial tonight, deputy.
Yeah, I was, well, since the whatever we are going to come up with here is still going to go to the public for comment and then still come back to us before we come to a final position. I would say since it is one of the things that came out in the course of the various presentations, I would say maybe let's leave it there, let it be there, so that not because we're saying to the public this is what should be, but maybe to its presence would also assist in raising the awareness of the public to something they may actually not want. So it might actually assist in getting feedback that says to us there is a sense in which the public does not want it by putting it there. And then when it comes back, it will be part of one of the things we have put in there, this one that the public have said they don't want or they've raised question marks about. And then it also assists to inform the debate that we have.
All right. What are we saying to those that are going to write it tomorrow? We're talking about, let's even take the, we just talk about corporates now, quite honestly. When you say corporates, we're talking about either corporates or AU. And, yes, sir.
Yeah, but I made a suggestion that corporates, you know, not unless they have a footprint. And I was seconded by Honorable Singh, if I'm correct. So I think we should move along those lines. But I was seconded by Honorable Singh. Yes, disagree, but let's get our second so that we can from there. Not vote, they were deliberating.
Honorable members, I want to repeat, this is not the be and end all of it. We're going to have a second bite in Honorable October. And it's a matter that we can still have a second bite in October. But it will allow South Africans, those that are following us now, to come and comment on this thing. Corporate will come and comment on this thing. Because one of our arguments this morning was, but we're talking for corporates, and yet we haven't heard what corporates want to say. And this has a direct link to corporates in this regard. All I'm asking is, how do we capture it? We can either take it out totally and revisit it, or we can leave it in and revisit it. I mean, that's really the decision. I don't want us to be fighting about it, because either way, it's not cast in stone, either way. Do you want me to have the casting vote? Take it out. Right? Let's take Kubisa and okay, look. We are going to allow everybody to have one bite at it, and then I'll take the casting vote, and you can hate me for that if you're going to hate me for that. Do you want to start this side or start that side? Let's start this side. It's really, is it in or is it out? And if it's in what form is it in? But it's certainly not going to be the last bite on this one, even if we've put it on our agenda for the next round. We will certainly come back to it, but it's for the sake of progress, honorable members. Let's start here, and we'll go up that way, and we'll end by Gordon.
Thank you, Jefferson. I think we said that it can remain, provided it's got footprints in South Africa. If it has, then it's okay. If not, out.
Is that how you suggested?
Yes. Mm-hmm. You know, Chair, understanding that you say it's not the final word, but I think I agree with Honorable Maseko that we say if it does have footprints in the country.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I think I'm not suggesting this thing very large. I think I've already made a lot of motivation. And what I'm saying is that if a corporate that has no relationship with this country, it's a no. Because what is the interest? What interest do you have? And I think generally we've raised a superior argument. I said Parliament discusses in a committee. They say they raise issues around funds. Some point one individual comes to Parliament and says, how much do you want? 2 million, 3 million, can give it to you now. Proceed. That it tempers with the decision making a lot of things. So if we're a corporate, we have no interest, we don't have any footprint in South Africa, what will be your interest on the developing democracy of South Africa? What is really your interest? Because if you have a footprint, then it means we have a better interest because you are doing business here, then we will need to allow you to donate. It's really sensible, Chair, I think. But I also agree with General Mavu that we can put it that way. We'll get inputs which will sharpen our minds and views, and we'll be open to any other input. But it will also be, even those who want to donate and they don't have interest in this country, we'll get to know exactly what interest we have to just donate in a developing democracy of South Africa. Because, you know, General Mateus also knows that we've raised a lot of issues, suspicions, perception around regime changes and so on. So we've got to guard against all those issues and guard against the democracy that we're developing so fast and so passionate in this country. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I am saying that national interest, and therefore I agree with the issue that somebody has got to have a footprint in the country and in a direct interest in South Africa. Thank you.
Honorable Mazamai.
Mr. Chairman, yeah, I know that there's going to be a second bite, but to get something out is going to be a lot more difficult than to get something in. And we really are opposed to this, so I would really request that it just be left out for now.
We're talking about the central fund now, so members, we're not even talking about directly to parties. Honourable Chair.
Thanks, Honourable Chair. From my side, it's a sad day in our democracy if we are saying no to additional funding because we are scared of being captured. I mean, we should be strong enough. Some of us are susceptible to being captured, but I think most of us are not. So I think leave it out because it's going to assist us in our, it's going to assist our parties. Thank you.
The Honourable Mathieu.
Chair, we're talking about the multi-party democracy fund. So I have not heard a superior argument on why anybody should be, well, except for dodgy people like crime proceeds, and I concur with foreign governments, should not be allowed to donate at all. And if there's going to be a regime change, it's going to be through the ballot by South African citizens. The money is going through a central fund that's going to be distributed. I haven't heard a superior argument on why South Africans, we must take on the burden. We do take on the burden because we are the ones who are going to vote. So at the end of it, I'm saying we must take it out because later on, how are we going to go back and we are going to amend that? So we'd rather exclude it for now and come back to it later.
Honorable Muller.
Yes, Chairperson. I agree. We are dealing with a multi-party democracy fund. The purpose is clear. To enhance multi-party democracy. The formula is going to be clear, we're going to determine. It's not going to benefit any individual party, it's going to all parties. And we have to understand, there are people in the international community who seriously believe in multi-party democracy. Do we want to exclude them? So I believe it should be taken out. If we leave it in, I believe it's going to come back and bite us, because people are going to come and say, but have you thought about this implication? You're now talking about individuals and corporations, but what about foundations? What about the multinational organizations like the European Union, etc., etc.? If you want to leave it in because you want to bring the issue to the attention of the public and get some feedback, let's maybe so. But my personal view is we should take it out completely.
Yeah, no, I concur with Honorable Mulda, Chairperson, and I've wanted to add my views. Thank you.
Honorable Singh.
Yeah, Chair, thank you. You know, my concern is that if you leave it out of the radar, nobody's going to comment on it. And it's going to come back to us here without having had the benefit of public input. I think we've largely agreed that, I'm saying I supported the idea of corporate with a footprint in South Africa, foreign individuals, foreign funding. We can get foreign funding from a South African citizen. I think that's what we said. Foreign funding, when we mean it can be deposited from Russia anyway, as long as the person is a South African citizen. And it's coming to a multi-party democracy fund. I wouldn't have a problem. I just think if we leave it out, then nobody's going to comment, and we're going to come back and have a three-hour debate here when we're going to talk tonight. So let's, from a point of departure, let's put something in which will elicit public comment. Thank you.
Comrade Good.
Well, as I said earlier on, it is not an idea that just come from the drafter. It was part of, if I remember well, some of the issues that we dealt with. And, it is an idea that is there, and I would have a problem if we start from a premise that say keep it away from the public because we who are here don't like it. What about if we get overwhelming support and it becomes actually the idea that is supported by the public, then what? And I would imagine that if it is such a bad idea, then let's expose it to the people so that they can confirm the correctness of our views around it and not just keep it away. And I would actually be wary of any corporate donor who would not want to contribute to a multi-party fund, but would rather want to be strictly partisan. And I think that is where it raises all manner of things. And if you recall, Chair, last week when the issue was raised, I actually asked, what do we mean by corporate donors? And I said, there are parliaments, like, no, there is money appropriated by parliament in, say, in America. It is this thing that I can't remember its name, but it's funded by the American Congress, which they use to influence to push American foreign policy interests. And you have other countries where political parties that are represented in parliament are given money to use in foreign countries to propagate their ideas and whatever views and perceptions that they have. And I said, from where I'm standing, when we talk about private corporate donors, it should not only mean private profit-making companies, but it must talk to those trusts, those institutions that are funded externally and go out there to propagate a perspective from their country. So I would imagine that if this is a very bad idea, let's expose it to the light of day and let the people also reject it. Let them comment, let's hear what they have to say. And then so when we come back, we can have the benefit of what the public say around it. Then we can engage with it.
Honourable Matthews, you still want it out. You still want to talk. No, everybody's spoken. We still have one round and take a point. Honourable, just I'm not picking on you for any reason, because it's everybody was saying, let's put it in, let's test it and get it out, but I want to give you... And the rationale used by Gordy is that, look, put it in, let it be shot down by South Africans forever. We'll have a second bite. Leave it out, it might fall off the radar and we'll forget about it. I mean, those are the two arguments that we're having. But we must do something. We must say something about it and test it. Can we suggest we leave it in and we argue about it tomorrow? I mean, I say tomorrow, I'll say when we have the second bite. All right. That's democracy. So that then, honourable members, deals with the multi-party democracy fund. I think we've dealt with the whole multi-party democracy fund. Baba, no. No, yeah, I want you to come and sit here, because you, the two of you, I don't know, have... Honourable members, we've dealt with that one. You see, I'm pushing you because we had arranged dinner for 7:30. We tried to move it to 8:30. I'm not sure that they're going to be there at 9 o'clock because they work overtime. So the sooner we deal with these matters, the better is your chance for dinner. But you can be here until midnight and you'll forfeit your dinner. It's fine.
There's this thing written here, or without qualification, or with qualification, because...
It's
individual or light, okay, no qualification or footprints or whatever, okay, sure.
We'll come back and tell us what it is. We're saying foreign corporates that don't have a footprint, it's just prohibited. Direct funding to political parties, Honourable Members. Yes, 17. I thought we said that because we are asking the National Treasury to see us on the 1st, can we put it to them, because it's Treasury stroke SARS, because it could be an incentive, but I'm saying we wouldn't be able to take that decision. Because I remember, I think it was Honourable Self when we had our first meeting that said, the former minister said, don't joke, when he said, will there be an incentive? He said, look, what's the next question? So my suggestion is, we should leave it first of all, we're meeting before this thing goes out, and then we put it specifically to Treasury when they're here. When we get their views, we were then incorporated, because those views will come before you start drafting, isn't it? When do we give it to Michael? We give it to Michael today. Oh, okay. No, if we give it, no, then your point is correct. Maybe we should then say that, can we say, you see, we can't say there will be tax incentives. It's not our jurisdiction to say there will be tax incentives. Do we want to say anything in our bill about tax incentives? Yeah, that's why I'm saying, do we do it in consultation? Don't, because, you know, but Treasury will be after we would have had, no, before we come to you guys, I want to get it to these people. The idea, the politics around it was that maybe the carrot should be, if you donate, there could be a benefit for donations tax. That was the politics about it. The question is, who is the authority that does that? Is that not the domain of Treasury and SARS? And if it is the domain of Treasury and SARS, is it not better we consult with them first? But I'm hearing Michael saying that no, but you want to do your act before that, which again is a timing problem. It can still be discussed. No, Michael, don't make our life difficult. Michael is actually making our life difficult. It's not like he has to have it today to finalize it today. You can do all the other work on it. And he's still got 2 weeks after the 1st to finalize it. Can we agree that we park this thing and have the discussion with Treasury, and we can, it's a one-liner, Michael, it's not killing the bell. We'll go to Treasury and ask them the implications. Let's take Mateus Mulder and then Comrade Scotty. My suggestion is Treasury comes on the first, discuss it with Treasury, because it'll be searching one line. But if there's other views, let's start with Mateus. We're talking purely on 17 Mark.
Yeah, we can wait for Treasury. I'm fine with that. But, okay, maybe we're going back a little bit. I would think that we don't have to provide a tax incentive to corporates, right? Because, because this multi-party, sorry, I'm talking aloud, thinking aloud and talking aloud. The multi-party democracy fund applies both to corporates like businesses and individuals. So I would have liked for us to rather provide tax incentives to individuals and just not to necessarily to corporates. They're operating and they make profits in this country as well. But I'm happy with the SARS waiting until SARS Treasury attends.
Honourable Mulder.
Chairperson, if we can remove something later on, we can also then include something later on if need be. We all would like to insensitize or corporates and people to make donations to this fund. And the suggestion was in terms of tax break. But we don't know until we speak to Treasury. There was another incentive that I don't know if it's going to work, but corporates will be able to tell us. You remember there was at some stage what they called the Social Responsibility Index. It comes from the King reports and those kind of things. In the whole process of companies who want to foster good corporate citizenship, etc., etc. I understand that has been replaced with something new called now the Responsible Investment Index or something that goes with corporates. I don't know how it exactly works. All I'm asking is maybe corporates can give us some guidance, say they've got this indexing. And if companies donate to this fund, it may be to their benefit in terms of that index and everything that it entails. I don't know the details. I don't know how it works. But it may also be something that may be included at a later stage if we've had some consultation with corporates in South Africa.
Honourable Gordy, you've got us.
Yeah, thanks, comrade. My approach would be that at the center of the funding of represented political parties, We should put public money at the center thereof. The issue of the multi-party democracy fund, my understanding was that it is put there purely because it might as well be so that there are companies that would rather put money where it is in a pool, and if there are foreign corporate donors and individuals, they may put money there. So that it does not come across as if the entire process is 50-50. Between public and private funding, because then now if we have to go to the point where we need to incentivize them, entice them, and they become institutionalized in the process and the ability of political parties to be funded, I suspect it might have some unintended consequences somewhere down the line. So whether private companies donate or do not donate, it must really and purely be voluntary. They must do it, I think Honorable Mulder had put it well, but purely on the basis of whether they want to do it or they don't. And actually they currently do it without any incentive. The moment it moves to incentive, it raises the question of
where do we place them in the totality of the picture of the funding of political parties? So more public resources to assist the process, I think it puts our political process in a much, much firmer ground than if we were to move to those levels. Thank you, Comrade.
All right. Into the multi-party democracy fund, we expected those that believe in multi-party democracy, and we are expecting those that are patriotic. So those should be incentive enough that I believe in the multi-party democracy, I've benefited from it, I'm patriotic. But we shouldn't be saying, and then we will give you X, Y, and Z. So we say, keep. Remove. Yeah, of course. I'm saying, but we will still discuss it with Treasury, but I'm saying our view should be your patriotism and your belief in multi-party democracy should count for something. And just volunteering. Okay. We now move to so we're done with the multi-party fund. So anybody that goes back to the multi-party fund, we will stop you. We're now talking direct funding to political party. Mr. X or corporate X or government X directly to the political party. That's what we're discussing now. And we move to 18. Obligations. Do you want supper? Oh, do you want to? My fear is when Cindy was asking me, I was saying, knowing my brothers and sisters on this side, you'll have supper and you'll disappear. Unless you commit to me that we'll have 15 minutes supper and come back, because we've got to finish it. So we'd rather have a break for until 8 of, you know, until 9. Oh, Cindy said she'd asked him to have dinner for 9. Can we push another half an hour? We'll push for another half an hour, have dinner, and then we'll decide if we must come back for 10 minutes. Thank you so much. Chapter 4, as we have it in our document. Obligation to disclose. We all agree. What we are saying is political parties will disclose to the IEC. When we say disclose to the IEC, they will disclose all their donations, cash and kind. Let's include cash and kind. It must be law. I think what is missing from the honourable members is, should we not say by the end of the financial year? There must be a date that we know. We here in Parliament, by the end of June or 6 months afterwards, we declare. So shouldn't we say, I don't know, because you'll recall that there were submissions that were saying under normal non-elections years, we can do it annually. But in elections years, we should be doing it more regularly. That was what the South Africans were saying here. So all I'm saying is we must declare our donations and whatever is one thing. But if we want it to be transparent and audited, shouldn't it be declared so that the Auditor General and or the authorizing agent has it for them to be able to do their work? So I'm saying, should we put 6 months before, 5 months before, 1 month before? That's the only question, because we all agree they must declare their donations. All I'm asking is, should we say by that date? That's the only question, nothing else. Is it, should we put a date? Is it not too open-ended if we say they must declare? Got it.
Yeah, no, you are right, Comrade. There has to be time frames, otherwise some might declare in January, others in December. I want to suggest that, as you know, at the end of each financial year, political parties submit audited financial statements to the IEC, so it can be part of those submissions, then it will be fine.
Right. part of the audited submissions must include declaration. It's a law that you must declare. All right. What we said, you do not need to declare. So we say it's total declaration. That's what we're saying here. You declare everything, with the exception of membership fees, with the exception of levies, with the exception in the provinces, section 57 and 116 of the Constitution, and we're saying a threshold. We can argue about what is the rand and cents of the threshold, but again, for your argument, Honorable Matthijs, if somebody donates 2 rand, do they really want them to donate? What is the threshold for no obligation to declare? Because you're saying declare everything except. Now, I think membership and levies, we agree. Can we tick that one? We're not coming back. Funds that we get in the province, like we get nationally, that is IEC regulated, we agree. We can tick that one. All right, Honorable Milner.
Jefferson, I may be wrong, but I don't think we're going to put the amount of a threshold in the bill. You can just going to say a threshold has to be regulated in terms of regulation.
So the suggestion, no, but we're saying somebody must be, in terms of the time frame, we're saying financial year, that bullet point we can tick as it is. That's what you're suggesting, Malda. What a threshold which will do that time. Honorable Is.
Mr. Chairman, then the determination of the regulations must be done by someone that we, the Act determines who's going to do that, set that threshold, and it must be approved by Parliament annually, or whenever there's a change, well, I think annually. Just like any other monetary rates and monetary bill that we go through every year, if there's a change, it must be approved by Parliament.
Yeah. The regulations, I thought we were gonna be the authors of the regulation. I don't know, let's,
Yes, we haven't discussed the regulations, they are quite important, but for guidance, we can look at the current section 10 of the current bill. And that says there should be a committee that agrees on the regulations and they make a recommendation. I haven't looked at all the details. It could include the question of the House agrees to that, etc. But we are going to be involved in the regulations to a certain extent, because if we are not, we may find that someone in the executive comes up with something completely different from what we've got intended.
No, I think there's agreement that we can't outsource because this is a legislative bill. Okay, so it covers your point. So we can tick that one. Honourable Matthijs.
Yes. And we are going to have a threshold for both private and corporate donate, a different amount. Yeah. Because, I mean, private individuals and corporate, or did we decide on that, or it's going to be a flat amount? Yeah, on the threshold for declaration. For individuals and corporate. Where we are. Oh, we're not there yet. And then, I just want to go back, because the disclosure to the IEC, right, and a lot of submissions that we received, they were complaining that they don't get access even to our financial records, right, which are supposed to be public anyway, so the whole thing was access. So are we going to have something in there that says the IEC must publish our financial records and it must be easy accessible? Because that was the big thing, is them getting access to that information. Or are we just disclosing, and if we just disclose it to the IEC, it comes back to that whole question, is like, are we really having transparency? Because it's the public that wants to know, and they must, and that's what they're pushing for. They want to be able to access this information.
I think the reason why we said the IEC is because the IEC is supposed to account to Parliament on an annual basis through the annual report. What we can do is to say to them, your annual report should include the declaration of donations. Comes to Parliament, the relevant committee, and it's a public document. I thought that would suffice. But if you're saying over and above that, it must go on a on a website. It's something we can discuss. The IEC is coming to see us anyway on Tuesday. But they have to report to Parliament. And once they report to Parliament, the annual report, it becomes a public document. Let's take a recent listen. Just on this matter.
Yeah, Chairperson, I don't know, because my working with the IEC, because I've been working as CEO of the party and also accounting officer, at the end of each financial year, we submitted another report, audited statements from an auditor. And then if there's anything wrong, they bring back and you start afresh and tell you, we don't accept this report, or otherwise they give a qualified audit or disclaimer. I don't know what happens here, but I think they take the report to the Auditor General, and so that report becomes the property of government. But I think we need to add a proviso that with regard to donations, they must also include donations and also must also count to Parliament about those donations. Thank you, Chairperson.
No, I think that's what we're saying, because we've been arguing that you can't have accountability without transparency. Now, if the work method satisfies that, we don't have to do anything. If the work method has that gap, after having discussed with them, I think we must put it in. Because I think there's no dispute that once we report it, it must be made available. But can we share it further? Okay. Moving from the premise that it's full disclosure. Oh, sorry, Liz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We really are not having a full discussion on the right to privacy, and I think that's why the next bullet point was underlined, full or limited disclosure. Well, we keep talking about full disclosure, but we actually haven't decided on full disclosure. So there's no way that we can agree to a full disclosure without having a full discussion about the right to privacy. Whether it's the IEC making some annual report, whoever makes the annual report, we first of all got to decide what's going into that report. So the annual report's fine. No one's going to argue about that. But what exactly is going into that report? That's the key to this whole thing. And our view is, and we've stated it previously, that the right to privacy cannot simply be trumped by the transparency argument. It just can't be, and we need to, and I'm getting very tired, I've had a long day, so I'm not making too much sense, but we need to be in a position to debate this, talk sensibly, and in terms of the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and whatever is affected, convince each other of what the right thing to do is. So if the bill is going to start being drafted as though there's a so-called full disclosure, which is the terminology that people are using at the moment, then we've got a problem from our side.
Honourable Lees, you know, we had this debate with Honourable Self here, and I thought we concluded it, but we can have it again. And I'm giving my position. Other people can keep their position. When we started this process, we said we want to enhance democracy. In other words, that the will of ordinary South Africans is not usurped by the moneyed. We said that we want accountability, because we as Parliament expect everybody to be held accountable. We must be held accountable for the money we receive and the money that, or how we use it, when we started this exercise. And the third one was transparency. And I take into account that there is the constitutional obligation, right to privacy. Similarly, there's our founding pillars of the Constitution that talks about transparency, accountability, and openness. So I'm saying I'm not disputing those two. But I'm failing, and I said this to the DA representative yesterday, this morning, I'm failing to understand, and this is me, not the chair, but this is just me, I'm failing to understand how it is that we can insist on accountability, but you're arguing transparency. Because there can't be accountability in the dark. So, if we are all of us champions of accountability, then it must be a transparent process. That's the first thing. Secondly, I think that our argument always has been South Africans must know who's donating to political parties so that at the end of the day they must have confidence in the democratic process and not that their vote doesn't count because a rich somebody diverts the policy because he who pays the piper calls the tune. And therefore, and I said this morning, I said on this one, personally, honourable members, I feel so strongly that it can't be that you are a champion of accountability. Not corruption breaking, accountability. And you're saying that there must be some degree of non-accountability. Because when you donate, you're donating voluntarily here. Nobody's forcing you to donate to either the political party or to the central fund. So for me, total accountability enhances the notion that all votes count, whether you've moneyed or not moneyed. It also is a sure safeguard to accountability. And therefore, there should be disclosure and no non-disclosure. That's my argument. Let's open it up to everybody because that's the real thing. Full disclosure or no full disclosure, why and why not? Honourable Mulder.
Yes, Chairperson. I don't know if we need to go into a long discussion. Let me put it this way. I understand that the Democratic Alliance feels very strongly about this point, and I understand that. And the debate is basically about, on the one hand, the right to privacy and what it entails, and that privacy for the donor and for the party. And on the other hand, the whole concept, as you just mentioned now, in terms of transparency, accountability, etc. It remains an issue. If we say full or limited disclosure, I would like to understand what would limited disclosure imply? What do we mean with limited disclosure instead of full disclosure? And I don't know if we need to have a full and long discussion about that, but maybe Democratic Alliance could, if they want to, come back to us and put something in writing and convince us in terms of how they see this, in terms of limited disclosure. Because if you look at the rest of that chapter 4 dealing with direct funding of parties, what do we expect? If you look at point 19, for example, what parties should do? They should record their income and expenditure. Is that a problem? I don't know. They should provide reports on campaign funding and expenditure. Is that a problem in terms of disclosure? More than once during election period, is that a problem? Disclosure of political party accounts and reports. I'm not exactly sure what the objection would be, and if you talk about limited disclosure, what would that mean? So we can have a long discussion now, or we could give our colleagues time to reflect and bring something back in writing, because I don't know if it's going to have any impact at this stage in terms of the drafting that we're busy with. Just an idea.
Honourable Godin and Bongo.
Yeah, thank you, comrade. I think I also would want to have an understanding of what full disclosure is, as well as limited disclosure. And I'm looking at that in the context of the bullet point just below it. If you're going to have thresholds beyond which there should be disclosure, is that where limited and full disclosure come in, and what would it entail? What is it that should be disclosed? I thought you're disclosing the amount and the identity of the donor.
Yes, thank you, Chair. And I thought that your opening statement around this matter was a superior argument, and really it should have convinced Honorable Mazamban. But we've discussed this matter at length. I think I agree with Honorable Mulder that we don't need to go back to it. But maybe a summary of the superior argument to raise is that the founding provision in chapter one of the Constitution, actually section one itself, and 1D, I think those founding provisions of this Constitution are a pillar and a cornerstone of what we want to do here today. And we've overemphasized this point, I think, more often than not, that transparency, accountability, and to enhance democracy. And if we want to do so, why would we think the right to privacy is superior than all these other three that are in the founding provisions of the Constitution itself? But second, Chair, we said we're dealing with a situation where the person who must be protected against this privacy is the person who voluntarily gives the money. So what should be the reason of now raising right to privacy? Because it's you who are saying, I want to give. So now we want to protect you from what? Because this is a voluntary act. You're voluntarily saying, you want to give the money. So what is there to hide? And when we're viewing, I think Mr. Dlamini from the EFF has asked a very pertinent question, which I think it is also academic in a way or another, and we need to pursue it. And Honorable Self could not address that one. To say the right to privacy, as it opposed to you being protected or you being the one giving. So in this case, we can't give a right to privacy to the person who he himself voluntarily say, I'm going to give to you. The right to privacy will be viewed in terms of a person who must be protected against things that are happening against that particular person in the main. So I think the right to privacy vis-a-vis the right to accountability and transparency and enhancing democracy is far outweighed by the right that has been raised by Honorable Mazamba. I think we need to close it. We need to just close it at that. But we may further pursue it and get the public to comment about how we see these rights and how do we rebalance it. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I think it's stretching the boundary somewhat to suggest that to not publicly disclose in full is not to be accountable. It's absolutely not true. What we're talking about here is whether there's a full disclosure in public, and that's what we're talking about. You're saying it's going to be either on the website or the IST report, and we're saying that kind of full disclosure infringes on people's privacy. And so the disclosure that we talked about yesterday, if you recall, was the suggestion that we use the model that is used here in Parliament, where there's a confidential disclosure. And that is the kind of disclosure. It would be full in the sense it would be a disclosure in full, but not public disclosure. And we discussed that yesterday, and I understood that we'd made good progress to achieve that yesterday. And, Mr. Chairman, my briefing from James Self earlier today was that whilst the subject was discussed this morning, it wasn't exhausted. And there was no consensus on it, which if I listened to you just now, you suggested that there was. And I accept if I was wrong in hearing you. So I think the argument is far too simplistic to claim that if you don't have full public disclosure, you're not accountable. That's absolutely not true. Absolutely not true. And so the question really is, we agree with disclosure with certain limitations and caps, and we need to then limit the public exposure, and it's the disclosure would be to a particular organization, entity, and a register, which could be accessible if there is a need to investigate some kind of corruption or criminal or influence or whatever. But the rules of access would have to be determined. And so, Mr. Chairman, we really do have a problem. Then you went further into 19, or someone went into 19. Yes, we do have a problem with that. We certainly have a problem with that. There need to be some caveats, and you can't just simply talk about this kind of thing. The next thing you're going to suggest that, well, perhaps I'm an MP and my housekeeping budget must be public. Really, what I spend my money on is my business. And so the same really is here. I know it's a bit of a silly analogy, but I'm trying to make the point that what we're trying to do is to ensure that the funding of political parties is adequate in the first place, and secondly, that it's not abused. And then if it's statutory funds, of course there are limitations on what it can be used for. But if my party wants to throw a dinner for a whole lot of voters that we think are possible supporters, well then, so what? It's got nothing to do with anyone else, the IEC or anyone else in the country. The voters will decide whether they want to vote for us or don't want to vote for us. So this is an overreach of in our opinion, and so in terms of the public full disclosure, there needs to be some kind of way of achieving the objective without infringing on the privacy. And so I'm happy to take up the suggestion that we work on a drafting of a section on that, if that's what the committee wishes us to do.
No, we don't want you to draft a section on it. Definitely not. No, let me finish, Honourable Lees. What we are saying, and I think this is what Honourable Miller said, all parties that spoke, even when we spoke about the previous fund, there was total disclosure. Including the DA agreed that there must be total disclosure. All we're saying to you, and Honourable Miller is correct, we don't have to have an argument about it. You need to come with a superior argument as the DA, why you think that there should be limits to disclosure. And we'll put it to the table and we'll discuss it. But we don't want you to put a clause there, because we've made our arguments, we'll give you a second bite, come and tell us, what does limited disclosure mean and what are you hoping to benefit from limited disclosure? Because you must convince the rest of us. And just to add, Honourable Lees, you know, And I'm not saying you must take it one way or the other, but News24 did a survey over the past 2 weeks, and it asked a specific question: Should political parties disclose where their funding comes from? A national survey. 65% of those that responded said, we as the public want them to disclose because we want to know. So when you come with your argument, it can't be for the sake of the DA. It must be for the greater good of the country. And we will, certainly in our argument, we will use all these factors, because it's really not about the political party, it's about the democratic process, it's about the betterment of our country. So I think that, honourable members, we are going to allow the DA to come and convince us why they think it must be limited disclosure, and ultimately all of us will come back and say we agree with them, we're convinced, or we're not going to be convinced. I don't think we need to discuss it any further in terms of that disclosure.
That's a misrepresentation. We have not said that there would be limited disclosure. We're talking about public disclosure. And indeed, this committee has already agreed to limited disclosure.
Yeah.
And you'll see the exceptions, which the committee has already agreed to limit the disclosure. So please, Mr. Chairman, do not misrepresent the position of the DA. We are talking about the disclosure in the public domain.
It's fine. I mean, you're really getting to semantics now. All we're saying to you, no, we're not going to allow you to bully us. We're certainly not going to allow you to bully us. Unless the DA comes with an argument to the contrary, we will take a decision. All I'm asking members is, what should the deadline be? So that, because it's the same argument that we used for do we or don't we include those type of things. Can you also put that to the first? Because at some point we must take a decision on that. Honourable Mulder, by the first, we'll take a decision on public disclosure, on should there be, as Honourable Lees was alluding to, stuff that should be like in the declaration reserved or all that, but we're going to take a decision. Honourable Mulder.
Thank you, Chairperson. The point I just want to make is that Honourable Lees's input to me was helping in the sense that I understand now what they mean. And what he's basically saying is it's not a question of not full disclosure. They've got noted a problem with that. It's a question of where you make that full disclosure and how the public will have access to that automatically, or is there going to be a different entity? I understand that. So all I'm saying is if the DA wants to put that in writing and explain that fully and argue that, then we can take it further from there.
All right. So let's recheck whatever we're saying. If it's about how it's disclosed. Is it on a website? Is it on demand? Is it easily accessible to South Africans? You'll come and convince us on that one. But we agree there must be disclosure. Is that what you're saying, isn't it? Are you saying... Oh, fine. So, and that's what I'm saying for the record, there will be disclosure. Because just now when we raised disclosure, Mr. Lees, you were the one that was saying, how are you talking about disclosure before you? You were the one that introduced it. So the agreement is that there will be disclosure. It's how that disclosure will go to the public domain. Fine. If it's going to go. Yeah, fine. We're saying, should it go? If it must go, how it must go, you'll convince us otherwise. Yeah. All right. That then deals with... And also, let's just get to the last bullet point. I thought this morning we said there's no different thresholds for individuals and corporates. It's the same thing. So that bullet point falls off. Bullet point 19. It's 9 o'clock. Do you want to break for dinner? Can we agree that we come back at 9:30? We've got 2 pages. We should be done by 9:30 or so. Okay, everybody that is here, all of us, you are invited to Mark's building for dinner. We're not ready, so we'll take it for you.
Oh, wow.
No, they don't bring it here. When I said everybody, I'm saying the 5 of you, I'm sure you won't be able to convince us otherwise. And you guys, we go to Mark's building, we'll have a quick snack.